ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Well, it's not the day, the morning you'd like it to be after the Sox and Cubs both lose.
They're still first place, Fred.
That's what I've heard. That's what I've heard. Yeah. Still there. 3 games up on Cleveland. But, yeah. Hitting.
Cubs nursing a 1-game lead. But, hey, after this past week.
Yeah.
At least the Brewers decided to scuffle a little bit right along with the Cubs.
Well, and I was going to save this because I just got done with it right before the show started. After the weekend series with Miami, the Cubs' next 12 games are all against teams with above 500 records. They got Cleveland for 2, the Dodgers at LA for 4, at Milwaukee for 3, at Cincy for 3. Everybody's over 500. After the White Sox series in Houston, their next 18 games are against teams that are 500 or below. Pittsburgh, Seattle, Minnesota, Detroit, Minnesota, and Baltimore, leading up to the All-Star game.
Time to at least double up that lead in the division, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, as the coach used to always say, when they used to get to play the bad Packers, the bad Lions, the bad Vikings, and the bad Buccaneers in their division, you can only play who's on your schedule. So every year the Bears basically had 8 wins starting the year because the rest of the teams of the division sucked. And that's what you have to do. You play who's on the schedule. And the White Sox do get, this. We knew that this series this week was going to be tough with 3 against Tampa. They win the last game, losing a 7-2 lead and then winning 8-7. That it wasn't pretty. But you know what? They all count as victories. Much better to win an ugly game than lose an ugly game. The Houston has just been, they've been throwing pitchers out there that if you don't follow baseball a lot, you don't know who the hell these guys are.
Plus, I believe they can hit a little bit from what I've seen.
Yeah, I've heard that. What do they have? Mm-hmm. What was it, 10 straight multi-homer games for them or something like that?
I mean, last night they got just enough, but you ran into a little bit of you still have time to make amends, but that was quite a little pitcher's duel last night.
Yeah, it was very nice. I mean, it was a great game. And, you know, Rodon just, they asked him for the 7th. He went out, pitched the 7th. He's been throwing great. And
Of all the great stories on that team and all the surprises, he's still number one for me. I just, one that they brought him back and 2 that he's now absolutely in the conversation with, is he your ace? I mean, I get Lynn, Dallas Keuchel, nothing to sneeze at. Giolito, still pretty damn good. But if I have to win a game tomorrow, well, that's, Tony La Russa has to figure out which guy you hand the ball to and hope you get 6 or 7 out of it. That's a tough conversation right now.
Yeah, it's fun when you do get to the playoffs. I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I'm talking about past seasons. It's always interesting when you try to figure out who's going to be your 1, 2, and 3 pitchers because in the playoffs you usually don't use your 4th guy as a starter, and then your 5th guy is out of the bullpen and things like that. But that was one of our poll questions for today is if the White Sox had 1 must-win game this season, who should get the start? Giolito, Keuchel, Lynn, or Rodon? We'll leave Dylan Cease out of that after the other night. And that didn't set up well either. The first 2 guys get on base by defensive miscues, and then the 3rd guy up hits a home run. It's 3-0, and it's like, okay, the party started. But he's pitched better this year, but not better than these 4 guys.
No, and look, Twitter limits you to 4 choices. That's one thing. But Dylan Cease is interesting as he's been and as optimistic as what you want to believe his future looks like. And you, Michael Kopech, I mean, eventually, maybe even next season, he's a starter again, right?
Sure.
But right now, those 2 guys aren't in the same conversation with the other 4.
No, no doubt. So Giolito, Keuchel, Lynn, or Rodon, you can see us on Twitter, at ESPN1000 on Twitter. You can vote. And you can also jump on if you want to call and talk about it, 312-332-3776. And you may even be listening to us in high def, which, you know, you'll say, man, he sounded bad before. Now he really sounds awful.
Now you can tell he's been out drinking the night before.
Well, yeah, and that, yeah, that would be the case, too, because my guy Fat Mike had his lager finally dropped at Nick and Ivy Brewing, so we were had a few of the lagers, and they were very, very tasty yesterday. And
I always like lager. I prefer it when people, you know, what kind of beer like. Lager right top of the list for me.
Yeah, I mean, and that's for those who don't understand, lagers are basically what you probably grew up drinking. You know, a PBR is a lager. A Miller is a Miller Lite. Miller, those are all lagers. Take a little bit longer to make than the ales and the other craft beers and stuff like that. But yeah, that was tasty. But yeah, I was watching the games and I'm looking at all the highlights and listen, and it's like, you know, Jack Peterson. You know, I did not think. And I don't think anybody did when the season started because he was playing pitch hitting so poorly. But, you know, the two balls he hit, and I'm looking at the article today. I think it was Russell Dorsey in the Sun-Times. And it's funny. They don't tell you how far the ball goes anymore. But his exit velos were like 113 point something and 112.
It's all about exit.
Yeah.
Velo,
so it doesn't matter if it went, you know, 387 or 402. The exit
363
velo.
Happy feet.
Yeah, exactly.
Wasn't that Southwest Airlines sponsorship or something?
I think so, and it made sense back then. So let me see here. I got it here. Last night, 113.6 and 112.2, the exit velos. He's got seven homers in June.
I thought that was our new high def.
Yeah. No, our new high def is 100.3.
Yes, HD2.
Correct.
100.3 HD2. And a lot of cars have HD in it, which is great because you get, you know, if you're a rock and roll fan, the loop is still on. If you're a rock and roll fan, you can still find the loop.
Grandmeyer's still on.
Well, they actually ran, there was commercials for Mancow, but it's still the loop. And they play the music that that loop listeners like listening to. And I think that's 101.1. It's like a KQX.
Yeah,
HD.
But don't go there. No.
Well, it's funny. I was in the car, listened to parts of the Sox game on the high def last night. And then I got up this morning and Chauncey sounded wonderful in high def. So it's funny because people always talk about getting, you know, in radio, they always say, how important is it to have teams and stuff like that? Because way back in the day when sports radio started in this town, the station that started it didn't want any teams because they just wanted talk. Plus, they were not.
They
were not after 4:30 in the winter. You know?
Yeah, it was a daytime only signal because was it WBA in Dallas had clear channel rights?
BAL or
BAP?
Yeah, you're right, BAP. And
so we couldn't interfere with their clear channel rights. So we had sunset, which in January would be like 5:15 or 5:10.
Yeah.
But in June, longest days of the summer, we'd get to like 9:15 maybe, whatever it was.
That was it, yeah. Because if for some reason someone would forget to power down, all of a sudden we're getting calls from Texas.
Yeah, hang up. Get off our line.
But see, the reason you have teams is because last night I'm listening to the game. And then this morning I got in the car and there it is. There's Chauncey right on the station I went, you know, pulled my car in with. And that's one of the keys in radio is to have, you know, have teams so that when people pull their car into the garage or they you know, get ready to go home the next morning, boom, there's Cap and Jay Hood talking to you on morning drive.
But the thinking also, at least it was explained to us, you have independence to be much more objective. Not that the original cast or, you know, any of us still would pull punches on our opinions. You'd probably get called in the office a lot because you didn't pull your punch. But it was the idea that you weren't beholden to, because you were the rights holder to a station, to a team rather. So, you know, if you needed to go after somebody,
you could do it. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think those days are long gone. I think teams know they're going to be criticized in if it's right purposes or the right reasons. I think they understand how the game's played now, right?
Sure, I think so. I think so for the most part.
Although I do remember hosting some things at the Cubs convention and was basically handed, here are the questions you won't ask.
Oh, okay.
The family that owns the team.
Yeah, I guess that happens.
I remember being on those conference calls.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not talking about that.
Yep.
Really?
No.
I think the fans like to hear about that.
Sure they would.
We're not doing that. Oh, no. Okay. Yeah.
312-333.
I'm not getting paid for this either.
No, so I
what
understand.
If I just blurt one out?
Yeah. 312-332-3776. We'll throw a little baseball in here. Then we're going to get into probably the biggest story of the week, and that is that the Bears actually put a bid in to buy Arlington International Racecourse. And we'll talk about that in a second.
I'm out in the parking lot right now. I've staked out my tailgating spot.
There you go. There's another. I was in Arlington 2 weeks ago. Lovely place. Yeah. Great place. Easy in, easy out for the most part. And, yeah, it was nice. I had fun.
I mean, look, the express train from downtown takes about 30 minutes.
Yeah, and it's right there. It's right there. So we'll ask questions. We'll ask all the questions, talk about the Bears moving to Arlington Heights and, you know, what the Bears say and what the mayor says and all those kind of things. Let's get to the phones. 312-332-3776. Out to Beverly and John. You're on ESPN 1000 with Fred and Brian. What's up?
Hey, I was going to talk about the Sox, but I wanted to mention also you guys do a great job in that Hanley called it a couple of years ago that when Churchill bought Arlington Racetrack, he was right on top of it. We've heard this talk for years that they were going to close it, and the Bears always had their eye on that property. I think it's not a wishful thinking, but I think it's at least 10 years away before any deal or building is even broke with all the stuff that will happen in between now and when they decide who owns going to buy the property.
Yeah, well, they'd say, I guess the lease is good to, is like till what, 2033 at Soldier Field. So
yeah, it would be the first lease ever broken, believe me. You know, you know, and John, we'll get to your Sox question, but quickly here, I remember being out at Arlington when all the racetracks were dying to get slot machines on their properties, right, to help boost the purses and attract more horsemen and better horses and better racing. And it was more than a decade fight in Springfield. And then they passed it, and Governor Quinn vetoed it, and everyone was crushed at Hawthorne. And I remember our buddy Howard Sudbury, who's vice president out at Arlington Park, and at the time, I was out there one day early in the morning in the back in the barns, and I called Howard and said, hey, you know, come up and say hello. And he was at the time ushering around a bunch of state senators and representatives to show them where all the things, you know, where the basically the casino would go, where all the slot machines. That's how much they thought they were, how close they were to getting the bill done and saving horse racing. So the biggest surprise was once they finally passed legalized gambling, expansion of slot machines and everything to racetracks. Then Churchill came back and said, well, we just bought a majority stake in Rivers, and you know, we're probably not interested in doing this anymore because they didn't want to siphon competition away from the highest grossing casino in the state. So everyone was shocked, but, you know, look, these bean counters, it's all about money, whether it's coming from horse purses and wagering and handle,
right,
or from people pulling the handles at the slot machines and displays. So everyone was shocked. You know, you fought over 10 years for it, and now you don't want anything to do with it. So that was disappointing. But we'll get into it because there's a lot of layers to that onion, whether the Bears are serious and whether you want them to move. And a lot of people are passionate about their positions.
Yeah. So what's your Sox question, John?
The question is, I'm still convinced, well, I shouldn't bring this back up, but the McGann trade, I'm sitting here going every time I see the catcher McGann, that he's gone. It irks the hell out of me.
Yeah, you know what? And I was, John, appreciate the call. I was all for keeping McCann and getting rid of Grandal. And I don't care how many times he walks. McCann was a better catcher, in my opinion. Yeah, he might not be a better framer, but, you know, he would hit the ball better. He had a great rapport with the pitchers. You know, I know that Grandal's homers are nice. I know that his walk-off off the right field wall was great the other day when they won 8-7. But, you know, that's what we have. And because Mercedes has been struggling, you have in the lineup yesterday, you have, you know, a DH and a catcher. So both your catchers, you know, are, I guess Mercedes was your backup catcher sitting on the bench. Because
you don't want to see that.
Well, he did it for one inning. About a week or so ago, but that's, you don't want to see it as a continuous thing. Let's grab one more call before we take a break. Callers jumping on in. We go to the South Side, and Patrick, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Patrick.
Yeah, I got two things. First of all, I have an issue with not bringing in Hendricks in the ninth inning. When you got that 10th inning, when the guy automatically goes to second base, why not bring him in? because Houston brought their closer in. Why not bring him in? That's like a third time he's done this year. And I understand Crochet, he's a great pitcher in my opinion. But he's very young, and he's very high leverage thing going now, you know? So why not bring in Hendricks for that ninth inning? I didn't understand that. And as far as Goodwin coming, I don't know if he's the answer. I don't know.
Well, and see, the funny thing is, Patrick, appreciate the call. They had their nice little run. Lamb was hitting the ball, and, you know, Goodwin looks good. But there's a reason as a 30-year-old he's not in the big leagues now. And right. He hasn't been for a while. You know what I mean? There's the same thing, reason Jake Lamb has been bounced around, because they're not consistent. You'll get some good games from them, but to count on them to be the guys is very difficult. And from what we heard, good news about, you know, Eloy Jimenez, that he's going, you know, having baseball activities, and he could be around in August. That's a lot earlier than a lot of people, myself included, thought he'd be around. But until then, you got to do patchwork stuff. So if you can get a great week out of Goodwin and a nice couple of games out of Lamb, you try to piece them all together and, you know, try to hold on to what you got. And because you're in the division you're in and you've got the schedule coming up that you have, you should be able to, I would think, with the pitching you got. And that helps a lot.
Well, I saw someone on Twitter say he's about done with the Yerminator.
Yeah.
I guess the better question is the Yerminator done being a big part of the offensive puzzle here?
Yeah, that's a huge question. 312-332-3776. We'll talk baseball. We got Sox and Cubs. And we'll get into the Bears at Soldier Field in just a bit. 312-332-3776. Fred and Brian, Hanley and Huebner here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Facebook at ESPN Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
So Lance Lynn gets a call later on tonight. Sox trying to get a win down in Houston, losing 2-1 yesterday. Huebner and Hanley here on ESPN 1000. Let's get back to the phones. People are jumping out, want to talk some baseball. We go to Evanston, our guy John. Hello, John.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing well.
You know, two things. One about each ball club right now, because they're both entangled in quite a race here. As far as the White Sox go, I really like Rondon. I mean, his last outing was kind of, he was on and off. But, you know, he's been there all year. He's fought tooth and nail every inning. He wears his heart on his sleeve. I like that about him now. He's developing into the pitcher that we thought he would be. Our bullpen is strong. You know, I mean, if need be, we got a strong bullpen. We don't have to rely on the same guys every night. As far as the Cubs go, with the Brewers, you know, the thing that really, really bothers me about the Cubs is the fact that they're using their bullpen so much right now. And that might hinder them down the stretch. But as far as the Brewers go, that starting rotation of theirs and the fact that they got the face of their ball club back and he's healthy. I love their starting rotation. It's one of the best in baseball, and they continue to do well. So it's going to come down to head-to-head competition between the two ball clubs the rest of the way as to who's going to win that division.
Yeah, and they play them a bunch, John. We appreciate the call. They do play them a bunch. But, Brian, the reason the Cubs have used the bullpen so much is because they haven't got what they were hoping for from the starters. I mean, for the most part.
Not one.
No.
I mean, not one of them.
Well, actually, the last, let's see. Believe it or not, Zach Davies' previous 9 starts, his ERA was 186, but he'd only given up 5 runs in 5 outings. He gave up 8 yesterday.
Right. He started off terribly.
Yep. Yeah,
then he seemed to write it. But, I mean, they've all had these little stretches where, you know, Kyle Hendricks looks like he's never thrown before, and then he's the professor, and then he's, you know, scuffling again. And back to John's call, what do you make of the Reds? Well, I mean, they came out of the gate firing. You and I talked about it right away. It's like, this isn't sustainable, but, you know, you can give yourself a nice cushion here, right, to when you do even out over the course of 162. Here they come again. I mean, I'm not ready to dismiss them. They're the only team in the division that has they're 7-3 in their last 10.
Right.
And the Cubs are 6-4 in their last 10. Everyone else has a losing record in the last 10, but they are a very streaky Reds team, but I'm not sure who they are. They're the only team in the division that has a winning record on the road. other than Milwaukee. I mean, the Cubs are 15-20 at home. They're basically, other than last night, unstoppable at Wrigley. I'm not ready to dismiss the Reds and do you dismiss St. Louis at a 500 record right now, four games back.
Yeah, no, you can't. I don't think you can because they can hit the hell out of the ball if they can. And Castillo's got to be had to be better, and he has been a little bit better in his last couple outings. And then last night, I was surprised. It was last night or two nights ago. Woodruff just got lit up by the Rockies, but it was in Colorado, right?
I asked this question on Cap and J Hood earlier in the week. Who are you more afraid of in the division, the Cardinals or the Reds? And I think you can even lump all three of them. Yeah. If you're the Cubs right now, who do you fear the most? And I think it might be the Reds because you look at this Brewers schedule. Everyone is talking right now, okay, the Cubs have this really tough stretch that they're in the middle of right now.
Right.
And the Brewers have gotten off easy, and it's somehow the Cubs that have taken the lead in the division. You look at the back end of the Brewers' schedule, it's a lot of games in the NL West, a lot of games against the Cardinals, a lot of games against the Cubs. That looks like the team that could fade off. And I look at the Reds, this team's hitting well. Who knows, maybe they add a little bit of pitching at the trade deadline as well. They might be the real contenders in the NL Central right now.
Yeah.
I'm leaning that way with you, Tyler. I mean, right now. But it's a weird division, to say the least, because usually a little stretch like the Cubs have just gone through would put you a game and a half, two games back in short order, right?
Yeah.
So they're still nursing that game lead.
And what an amazing game was it Thursday night with the Reds and the Padres out in San Diego. I mean, you know, the Reds take a 4-2 lead, and then all of a sudden, you know, Pedro Martinez mentioned on MLB, he goes, I don't think this game's over yet. And Hosmer hits a two-run homer, and then Victor Caratini goes deep and wins it in the, you know, as a walk for a walk off. Just an amazing game the other day. Cincinnati's playing good. They've got Winker, and you know, somewhere along the line Votto's going to be hitting the ball when he needs to, and you still got Castellanos. They got some, and this kid India is really good. He hit the 2-run homer the other day, giving the Reds the lead. So 312-332-3776. We go to Willowbrook and Owen. You're on ESPN 1000. Hello, Owen.
Hey, guys. Hey, you know, I'm actually kind of glad that La Russa brought Crochet into the game yesterday because, you know, you got to put a young kid like that in a tough spot. I mean, the game you want to win, but it's not a necessity. What I found interesting was, though, and I know Bummer got hit the day before, and I don't think Bummer's been the same pitcher he was before the injury.
No.
I wonder if he brought him in not just to give him experience. I wonder if maybe Bummer's kind of lost a little bit of status in that bullpen, where Crochet is more the more go-to lefty, maybe. Bummer, I think, has kind of had a rough year, and he's had some tough breaks, I mean. But I kind of like the fact he brought Crochet, and I think what Crochet has to do, he's got to learn to be able to pitch up in the zone. You can't be pitching down low to these lefties that just have to drop the head of the bat down. I know he got through college and high school with speed, but he's got to be able to throw that speed up in the zone, and with that high kick, he's always going to be down low. So I think that's something he's going to have to work on. But I was glad he was brought into that spot.
Yeah.
And then you know, one other thing about Arlington, guys. In '73, when I was in high school, my friend's dad took us to see Secretariat run, and I'll tell you, that was one of the coolest sporting events. I know it was just an exhibition, but I really hate to see that park, you know, get sold and get torn down. But what a great history to it, and remembering Phil George Jeff and everything.
Here they come, you know, spinning out of the turn.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, just it's a heartbreak to see it, but that's progress, I guess.
That's what they say, and we'll talk about it. Owen, we appreciate the call, and I think he's got a good point about, you know, if you're Tony La Russa and you're used to going to Bummer in the key situations as your lefty out of the pen, you got to get Crochet working and figuring out how to be that guy, you know, coming up, because he's a young kid. Put him in some key situations.
Right, in high leverage situations and where, you know, each pitch could be a game decider. And again, we even talk about early on in that game last night, you know, you have to add on runs. So you have a 1-0 lead. In the first three innings, you could have had 5 runs, right?
Yep.
And against a team like that, you got to jump on them when they give you the opportunity. And sometimes you do just, you know, the old cliche, tip your hat to the other pitcher. But it's disappointing when you leave guys on base like that the first three innings, and now your margin of error is so thin, anything, little thing can happen, and it did in the game.
Here's your little problem. I'm looking at the box score, and it says here, and I like this, how the box scores, even the box scores in the papers have added things. Here's runners left in scoring position. Lamb, Goodwin, Vaughn, and Collins, all left guys in scoring position. Okay? If they, we told you that before the season started, it's like, okay, we expect that. We don't know what to get out of Vaughn, and Lamb, Goodwin, and Collins aren't necessarily your hitters.
Where's Jimenez? Where's Robert?
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. So it happened where the guys at the top of the order may have gotten on base. The other guys near the bottom couldn't come through, and that was a problem. So we'll see how they do tonight with Lance Lynn. Let's go to Aurora and Jim. Jim, what's happening today?
Hello, gentlemen. I'm really upset with MLB about if it's true that they've allowed the pitching scandal to go on for 4 years. You've got Tyler Glasnow basically admitting now that he's used sunscreen. All these guys are admitting it, and they're now saying, oh, well, let us cheat the rest of the year and then change the rule.
Yeah, so we can work on it.
I was totally, totally oblivious to all this, and the steroid scandal. I'm really upset.
Yeah, and yeah, Jim, you're right. And we're going to talk about Gerrit Cole a little bit later on today during the show, too, because I'm listening to all these guys, and they're talking about how important it is to put stuff on the ball. I mean, get off it. I mean, you know, they and then even some of the hitters. And we heard about 2 weeks ago, Peter Alonso said, I'd rather they put stuff on so they can control the ball. They're hit by pitch. There's more people being hit by pitch now than there's ever been.
Yeah.
So what are they talking about?
Does Gerrit Cole get that contract from the Yankees if he wasn't using that stuff with the Pirates?
Yeah.
I mean, the idea that you're using sunscreen in night games in a dome stadium. I mean, can you help me out with that one?
Yeah. I know. And Dempster was on one of the broadcasts the other day, and Jim, appreciate the call, on the Marquee Network, and he was talking about the stuff that he goes, you'd use whatever you could use, whatever you could put on and use throughout the course of the game. And so it has been going on for a long time, but what he was talking about was pine tar and, you know, sunscreen and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know,
you'd mix like a home remedy. You'd have your own recipe of a little bit of this. I got to add a scoop of that.
Yeah.
I think it was last week, Boog Sciambi was talking about, apparently he reads the Wall Street Journal, so we don't have to. And there was a story about the spider tack.
Uh-huh.
And I told you, you know, a couple weeks ago, that it was used for strongman competitions to help them put on the palm of their hands so they pick up cinder blocks and such. So a couple of guys in the strongman competition came up with this spider tack glue substance, whatever. And all of a sudden they started selling it. And a few years ago, the sales just took off. And they were shipping cartons, you know, boxes of it. The teams were ordering it in mass and in bulk. So like Boog Sciambi said, apparently the administrators of Spider Tack, the guys who own the business, know which teams have been using it, because it wasn't like guys were doing it on their own.
No,
they would just go into the guy who takes care of the bats and everything. Said, you know, like you need a new order of bats from Louisville, you'd go in and say, or the sales guy from Louisville would come in and say, you know, you need another order of bats, I'll have them here tomorrow. And they would just order it by the case. Someone knows exactly which teams has been doing this and for how long and how much they're using it.
Sure they do. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, we'll talk a lot about it, because I got some feelings on both Gerrit Cole and what Carlos Rodon said earlier in the week, too. We'll get to that. But we come back, we're going to talk about the Bears and the possible move to Arlington Heights. We'll talk about that. We've got a couple of polls geared that way. If you want to talk about it, your opinion on the Bears moving out of Soldier Field, and I think the earlier caller had it right, even if this happens, it's going to be 10 years down the road. It's not going to be anything close to, you know, it's not going to happen in 3 years. It's going to be quite some time down the road. And then it'll be or as Patrick Finley wrote in the Sun Times the other day, and a lot of people have talked about it. I know Dan Weider talked about it. And, you know, this has been done before by the Bears. And heck, Lori Lightfoot talked about it. This has been done before. Sometimes it can be a ploy to try and get some other things out of your current deal. So we'll talk about the Bears' possible move out to Arlington Heights. We'll do that. You want to jump in? 312-332-3776. Hanley and Huebner here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Brian Hanley, Fred Huebner, and Brian, your name came up on the radio during the week.
It did.
A couple times. Yeah.
Yeah. What'd I do?
Well, Sylvie was saying, when this whole thing came out with the Bears the other day, on Tuesday or Wednesday, and he immediately said, Hanley's been all over this for years. And I'm an idiot. I didn't quite recall. Plus, as you get older, you forget things.
Miss a little, miss a lot, Fred.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. And so, you know, I talked to you yesterday, and you were telling me some of the story about how this all happened. You told a little bit of it earlier, but, you know, when it came out, obviously no surprise to you because you had known about it. And I think when you mentioned how, you know, one thing I wanted to make sure I mentioned, too, and I didn't get a chance to do it when you said it earlier, when I was covering the Bears in Platteville, mm-hmm. way to hell.
The Hoist then. House.
Yeah. Well,
still got a bar stool with your name on it.
I would cover them. And when it was over, everybody would go to the Hoist House. I would drive down to one road. I can't remember what road it was, to Dubuque because they had Greyhound Racing and slot machines. And Illinois, as stupid as they were, that's the reason Maywood's no longer around. That's the reason Balmoral's no longer around. Sportsman's, I don't know what the hell, you know.
They screwed that up completely.
Yeah, that was the greatest track in the world.
The Bidwell family, I mean,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Well, and they actually had, I don't know if they still do, but they have a big hand in Churchill Downs, the Bidwells. They always did. So I'm not sure how much of that if it is still available or still
because it, well, it's publicly traded now, and it actually stock is doing very well for itself.
No, it is. It is.
All the gambling stocks are. Yeah.
Yeah, but that aggravated me so much because I knew people that worked on all those tracks, and they were out of work because basically people were coming, but if you would have thrown slot machines in there 30 years ago, they could have done it. It'd been done forever. In other places, and they just refused to do it. And that's
well. Here's why. What I heard, I was down at Gulfstream Park a couple of years ago. Was I like, you know, I was down there watching some of my investments, and
not only wagers.
No. Made the trip because fortunately, you know, been fortunate enough to have a horse or two, a lot of Chicago people retire down there and they like to go to the track, and it's not just, you know, Joel Quenneville and Savvy and Ron Majors.
Right.
So a bunch of the Chicago guys were sitting in the box next to mine, and I knew one of them through somebody, and, you know, instead of giving me tips on who I should wager that day, they said, "Hey, Hanley, have you heard this thing? I've been hearing a lot lately." And this was at least 2.5 years ago. The Bears are going to end up buying Arlington Park. And this was before Churchill made their intentions known that they were no longer interested in running a horse track, which shocked everybody, right?
Yeah.
But a couple guys who I think they would know what they're talking about told me that not once, but it was unsolicited. They just brought it up, and they brought it up every time I was down there. And I believe that they knew people who knew what they were talking about. I'm like, wow, that's interesting. Because as you said, they were fighting for trying to get slot machines and legalized gambling to help the tracks for more than a decade. I remember being out at Hawthorne the night that they passed the law, or the bill rather, and, you know, the Carey family and our guy Jim Miller, Jimmy, they were, you know, basically ready to pop champagne corks, and they were showing me where the temporary structure would go in the parking lot so they could get the casino up and running. And then Governor Quinn vetoed it, and it got left for dead again. So once this all got passed, you would think everyone, every track, in particular Arlington, and just look at that clubhouse and that to think that they're bulldozing that beautiful facility.
Right.
I mean, because it's whatever. That's been kept in a pristine state, and a lot of it had to do with Richard Duchossois and the way he ran things out there. But so I passed it along. I tweeted out. I'm like, you know, here's what I'm hearing. Well before it became known that Churchill Downs didn't want anything to do with horse racing anymore. And, it, you know, some people responded to it. But now here it is. The bids had to be in this past week, and the Bears bid isn't certainly the only one.
No.
Matter of fact, there's a guy who's a former Arlington Park president, Roy Arnold, and he's got Sterling Bay money, and that's the Lincoln Yards, and you know, they've got a ton of money, right? And they put in a bid to keep the track. And it's what, 326 acres? So keep the track, but develop with housing and a four-season entertainment district and make it a multi-use facility, right? And use every acre of it. But, I mean, selfishly, I would root for his bid. But if you're the Bears, you're going to need every bit of that 326 for parking and for, maybe a practice facility next to the stadium, even though they just put a ton of money into House Hall. Some people immediately said, well, like you said, top of the show, 1975 was the first time we've heard them threatening to leave Soldier Field, right?
Yep.
I think I remember back in the day when that picture of Mike McCaskey and maybe it was Ted Phillips standing out in Gary looking at a plot of land. And they, you know, they made sure the papers knew they were going to be out visiting that land.
Right? Sure. It's not like there just happened to be a camera person there as they were
exactly.
looking.
Exactly. Yeah. They got what they wanted with the front page picture of, you know, woof, woof, where we put the stadium over here. Like, but this seems to be different because Soldier Field is what it is, and it's 61,500. Now, we can say, okay, you're not bulldozing Soldier Field. Obviously, it's a war memorial. You could build a retractable dome stadium somewhere in Chicago. Good luck on the lakefront. I mean, talk to George Lucas, see how that would go. You know, how the Lucas Museum, is that up and running? I don't think so.
Nope.
So I don't know where you'd put it because they can't even figure out where to put a Chicago casino, right? Have they even settled on a site for that?
No.
They've been talking about that for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Here's the real scary part. Looking at this story when it broke this week, so you start looking about how much the renovation for Soldier Field costs. It came in at more than $700 million. And with the bonds that were issued, which aren't going to be retired till 2030, it'll be $1.2 billion. Now, I think the Walmart money out in L.A. are building, you know, the new SoFi Stadium right there. I think that whole entertainment complex in today's dollars comes in between like $1.5 and $2 billion. And, I mean, it's state-of-the-art and everything else. The 2001 to 2003 renovation came in at $733 million before you had to add the bond money. Where did that money go? Because as nice as the renovation was, it doesn't compare to what's down in Dallas, what's going in Vegas, what's out in L.A. I mean, the fact that the public may be on the line for $432 million still of the Soldier Field renovation first time around, it'd be a very hard sell for a bankrupt state and city to start ponying up half a $1 billion or $1 billion in public aid to get the McCaskeys a new state-of-the-art facility outside that's not named Soldier Field, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't see how you could start a stadium from scratch. Didn't Tom Ricketts try getting state help and everything else and city help and Rahm Emanuel said, we don't have any, and, you know, thanks for your call. So, you know, the Cubs got shut down pretty much on every front when they were renovating Wrigley. So I don't know what cards the Bears hold if this is a negotiations ploy. I don't know what your take on it is, but by any definition, the state's broke and the city's broke. So good luck.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Caller's hanging there. We'll get right back to you. Plus, Mark Potash in his article today about this had a great couple of paragraphs at the very beginning. I wanted to read you some of those.
Absolutely did.
Yeah, it was awesome. I want to read you that, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Bears' possible move to Arlington Heights. And don't forget, we'll do it throughout the show. We're here till noon. Jesse's going to join us at 10, talking more baseball. The Cubs trying to knock off Miami again. They play this afternoon. The White Sox go tonight. Lance Lynn on the bump for the South Siders. You'll hear it right here on ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Well, we got Jesse joining us in about 10 minutes, talking some more baseball, and we'll get back to the Arlington Park stuff. We got a couple callers. We'll grab them, too. A couple of polls we have out there, Brian. The Chicago Bears bidding to buy Arlington Park is serious or negotiations ploy? You can find these on Twitter at ESPN 1000. And where do you want the Bears to play? A renovated Soldier Field or a new stadium in Arlington Park? And we'll talk more about that throughout the course of the show. Let's go to our guy, Bear fan, Bob. Bob, what's happening today?
Gentlemen, good morning. Long time, no talk. Hey, Fred, you need to bring Brian to lunch one of these days with you. Get out, you know what I'm talking about.
I sure do.
You know, he'd love that. Anyways, I thought about this Arlington. I absolutely love the idea. And, Brian, I love your argument about the tax money, yada, yada, yada. Here's how this works in the state of Illinois. When they want to do something, it's miraculous how they find the money to do it. And it happens every time. Never mind.
It's called a property tax bill increase.
Oh, stop it. You're killing me. Anyways, I see a lot of good, even though I agree with you. Arlington is a beautiful building. I've been in there for their antique shows. It's wonderful. But change is inevitable. So why not the Bears? You know, a project like this is going to take them probably 10 years to build something like that anyways. And there's plenty of parking. It's much easier to get in and out of than the city. You know, I like it. I see a lot of positive for it, and it would be the Bears' own place. And you could even keep the name Chicago Bears. You know, Buffalo, their stadium isn't in Buffalo proper. I think it's in Hamburg or something like that. I've been by it. It's not downtown Buffalo. So
the Giants and Jets play in New Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of them who don't play at a place that they're called for. Yeah.
You know, I don't see any problem with that. I just see nothing but upside. Parking is better. You know, you could get a train line in there. Buses can go in. This isn't hard at all. This is easier and way better for the fans, for guys like me. You know, like I said, Chicago is hard to get in and out of these days. Not so easy anymore. So those were kind of my thoughts. And, guys, have a good day. Brian, I hope to see you at lunch someday.
Thanks, Robert.
Take care, guys.
Look forward to it. Yeah.
Thanks, Bob. One of the points he made, and we'll talk about that, about the NFL teams that don't play in the city that they're named after. We'll do that in a little bit. But here's Mark Potash today in the Sun-Times. And just his article, there was a picture above it. So this was on the first page of the article. It said, in my perfect Chicago world, there would be no lights at Wrigley Field. The bullpens would still be in foul territory, and the outfield baskets never would have existed. The Bulls, excuse me, I'm ruining this by having a congestion. The Bulls and Blackhawks would still be playing at the old Chicago Stadium. The White Sox would still be at Old Comiskey Park. The S-curve would be gone with some regret, but Riverview would still be standing at Belmont and Western. Maxwell Street would be thriving, and the city would still own the parking meters. Oh, those were the days.
Boy.
Yeah.
Amen.
I love tradition almost as much as I love Chicago. That's why I was fully in favor of the 2002 renovation of Soldier Field that kept the historical colonnades and the existing outside structure and kept the Bears playing in it. I overlooked the tackiness of the 21st century stadium wedged inside early 20th century architecture because it kept the tradition of old Soldier Field alive. But that time has passed. I thought that was awesome. I loved reading that this morning, and then along with the rest of the article. But that was awesome because that's the way a lot of people feel. And I loved Old Comiskey Park. I go to Guaranteed Rate Field. I loved Old Comiskey Park. The old stadium, yeah, the new one, the United Center is awesome. It's huge. It's massive. There was nothing like going to a hockey game at the old stadium.
Oh, you know, I remember opponents when I was covering hockey at the old stadium. Before the United Center opened up in January, and then the lockout happened immediately. So it took a while for them to start playing hockey there. But I remember, who was it? I think Steve Smith, who played for the Hawks, but was obviously on Edmonton.
Yeah.
He said walking up the steep steps from the basement of the stadium where the locker rooms were, and there were these old rickety wood steps. But he said for hockey in particular, with the balconies hanging over the ice, right?
Yep.
I mean, there's no place like it. And you know what those crowds were like if you're of a certain age. But he said, when you walked up those steps, it felt like you were down 2-0 before the game even started.
Yep.
Because the crowd was just ready to go, and you're going up these steep steps, and then you hit the ice, and there's 20,000 people ready to give you a Chicago welcome.
Yeah, it was amazing. There's nothing like a building all yelling, Dino sucks. And yeah. Yeah, every time Cicerelli came into the building, it was unbelievable. It was awesome. And, you know, being up in that third, you know, up in the second balcony and, you know, looking down onto the ice, it was a great place. And, but yeah, there is, I guess, progress. There is bigger buildings, huge buildings, more space, more room. No one's ever going to complain about the room in the concourses at the United Center or at, Guaranteed Rate Field. It's huge. It's different, but there's a reason so many people love going to Wrigley Field. And, you know, there's no longer concrete falling on heads. That's a good thing.
No,
you know,
they did a really nice job of keeping the flavor and the tradition of the place, but also bringing in the modern luxuries of video boards and more, you know, just the whole area is much nicer. You know, and the one thing about Soldier Field, renovated or not, Bob's right. It's not easy to get to. It has nothing to do with whether they renovated the structure itself.
Yeah.
try getting in and out of that place. There's a reason people leave in the third quarter, and it's not because Mitch Trubisky sucked. I mean, it's even if the game's good, you know you're going to be maybe take an hour and a half to get onto the Stevenson,
yeah.
right? I mean,
yep.
there's no easy way in and out. If you park, you have to park 2 miles away and then walk across the museum complex and campus to get to the place. It's as scenic and beautiful as it is, it's no one's idea of fun getting in and out of that place if you're attending a game there. You know, look, but even the Fire, your team, is
yep.
is building a $95 million complex, practice complex, right? So,
yep.
but they're doing it on the, they're not doing it on the lakefront.
No. Nope.
They're doing it in what, Hanson Park?
Hanson
area,
Park,
right?
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where they're working on. And they actually have a game tonight in Columbus. And then their next game, they play Wednesday and next Saturday at Soldier Field. And then as of July 3rd, they will be 100% capacity. But what that is for soccer, I'm not sure because, you know, they'll take as many people as they can possibly
sure.
get.
Right.
You know, so we'll see how that works out. I'll be at the game Wednesday and probably Saturday, too. Let's go to the north side. Eddie. Eddie, what's happening today?
Hey, guys, how are you? Hey, you're 100% about it. I agree the Bears should go there just for the fans' sake. Just getting to the place, you could take Rand Road. You could take Northwest Highway. You could take 53 in all other routes. And about the thing about it'll take 10 years to build, I'm a small business owner. You throw the right money at something, they could build a stadium up there in 3 to 4 years, no problem. But the thing of getting in and out, I remember when I went to go see Metallica, we nearly walked a mile just to get to Soldier Field. And it was like, wait a minute, we're going to have to leave early. This is going to be a nightmare when we leave.
Yep.
It's just a joke where it, just where it's at for the hassle of people getting in and out of the place. So I hope the Bears get it. That's a beautiful place, multiple ways to get there, and it's more wide open, and I think it would be beautiful for the fans of Chicago. And who cares what the mayor says? All right, guys. Have a great
Thanks.
Day.
Thanks, Eddie. Appreciate it. Well, we'll talk a lot more about this because I got a couple of things I want to bring up. I didn't get a chance to do it. We will do that. We're going to talk more baseball. Jesse's going to join us. We come back. It's Fred and Brian here on ESPN 1000.